Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Disaster Days by Rebecca Behrens, narrated by Jennifer Sun Bell. Nothing was remarkable that morning, except the postcard-perfect view of Mount Rainier. Most of the time, clouds and fog hid it, but the volcano was always there, watching us, even when we couldn't see it. We forgot that we were living right on top of a fault zone, and we never could feel the power struggle happening deep beneath our feet, the fight our North American tectonic plate put up as the ocean's Juan de Fuca plate slowly, determinedly slipped beneath it. For years and years, longer than any of us have lived, longer than most of the evergreens had stood tall in our forests, our plate had held tight, straining against the pressure, refusing to give way, protecting us. Then it budged. None of us on sleepy, safe Pelling Island knew what was about to happen. If I had, I would have done everything differently that day, starting with my last words to my dad. They definitely wouldn't have been "yum" and "thanks." I would have shrugged off missing the bus. I wouldn't have pouted the rest of the morning, which probably made my mom feel bad. I would have let her ruffle my hair and pull me in for an awkward car hug. I would have hugged her back, hard. And I never would have sent that text. But like I said, I hadn't known. Day 1. 1. Mornings in my house were a natural disaster. My mom raced back into the kitchen, still shrugging into her sweater. Seconds later, she yelped as the toaster spat out a piece of singed bread. Meanwhile, she kept trying to talk to me, but I was focused on untangling my headphones and thinking about Neha. How yesterday she hadn't waited at her locker for me after last period like she always does. How I had worried that she'd gotten sick and had to go home or something. Eventually, I'd walked outside without her. Right before the bus pulled away, she came running through the double doors, arm in arm with Marley. "Why the frown?" Mom peered at me from across the table, where she was shoving a mess of papers into her bag with one hand while shoving peanut butter toast into her mouth with the other. "Nothing," I said, looking down at the still knotted earbuds. I didn't want to get into the Neha stuff. Mom would stop getting ready and come sit next to me to talk it out, because she was a good mom like that. Even at the busiest times, she would stop, sit down, and listen. But we were already running very late, and I felt like just ignoring it instead. The phone rang, and Mom pirouetted to answer it. "Hello?" Her face brightened as she pulled away from the handset to tell me, "It's Dad. Let me talk." I scooted over, making grabby hands for the phone. "Here, Hannah wants to say hi." She zipped her bulging bag shut, signaling me to pull on my backpack. I pressed the phone to my ear while I worked my arms through the straps of my backpack. "Hi, Dad. How's the trip?" He was in Seabrook, this cute town nestled on the Pacific Ocean, where he'd been working on a new project.
"It's gorgeous here today. When the hotel is finally finished, we're taking a family beach vacation. Well, if they'll give the architect a special room rate."
Dad laughed.
"Listen, I was telling your mom that I'm going to be stuck here an extra night because we're having a problem with the irrigation system. But I'll be home tomorrow, okay?"
"That's cool," I said. Then I heard the double honk of the bus, the warning sign that it was leaving. I glanced at the microwave clock. So late. "Dad, I gotta go. I hear the bus."
"Oh, the honk tolls for thee. Have a great day, kiddo. I'll try to bring back some saltwater taffy for you."
"Yum, thanks," I said, passing the phone back to my mom. I grabbed my cell phone and notebook from the table before I bolted down the hallway. I flung the front door open just in time to see the yellow back of the bus driving away. Mr. Fisk was ruthless about keeping to the morning pickup schedule. My heart sank. I had really wanted a chance to talk to Neha. Marley got a ride to school from her parents, so the bus had become one of my only chances to be alone with my best friend. Now, I wouldn't see Neha until lunch, when she'd probably already be sitting next to Marley and laughing about something from yesterday's soccer practice or the team group text, a joke that would be hilarious to them, but unintelligible to me. I stomped back into the kitchen. Mornings were generally less disastrous when my dad was home. I only ever missed the bus when it was just Mom and me. She saw me glowering in the kitchen doorway. "Missed it?" I nodded. "I'm sorry, Hannah. Time management, you know, it's not my forte. Let's hope that's not genetic. Don't worry, I'll give you a ride." I slumped into a chair to wait for her to finish gathering the rest of her stuff, turn off the coffee maker, shrug on her purple coat, grab her library work badge, and then find her always misplaced keys. We finally got in the car and started down the road toward the bridge. Technically, I live in a suburb of Seattle, but it doesn't feel like a suburb. At least not the kind you see on television or that my California cousins live in. Pelling Island has wild berry bushes growing along the main highway, and a hint of salt water in the air. It has a real downtown, too, with shops and yoga studios and cafes. But the rest of the island is covered in a patchwork of dense woods. It feels like the country, but it only takes 30 minutes on the ferry to get to downtown Seattle. Or you can go the long way via car, circling the island, and then driving across the 2-lane Elliott Bay Bridge. But the traffic is often a nightmare. We've got everything on Pelling: the water, the forests, even a view of the Cascade Range off in the distance. "Whoa, the mountain is out," Mom said, pointing. There are a few special spots on Pelling where you can see Mount Rainier, although its snowy peaks are usually hidden by drizzly clouds. Catching a glimpse of the mountain is kind of a special thing, a good omen, like seeing a rainbow. Sometimes when that happens, Mom will pull over so she can stare at it, and I can take a photo. Not when we're running late, though. My mom glanced away from our street, Forest View Drive, to catch it again. "So imposing," she murmured. I shifted in my seat. Something that big and powerful makes me feel like a little ant. I went back to staring at my phone. We were crossing the bridge over the inlet that separates our mini neighborhood, a smattering of houses before the forest preserve, from the rest of Pelling Island. Between us and the bridge lives Mr. Aranita. He's retired and usually is either visiting his grandkids in Portland or on another bucket list trip, though. So most of the time, our only neighbors are the Matlocks. They're next door, but I once measured the walking distance between our front doors with the fitness tracker on my phone, and it's nearly 3/4 of a mile. I guess if you cut through our yards instead of going along our driveways and the road, it would be less. But the bramble bushes don't really allow for a shortcut unless you're wearing pants, a long sleeve, and some protective eyewear. "Don't forget, I'm watching Zoe and Oscar after school," I reminded my mom. I'd only babysat for the Matlocks, for anyone, actually, once before. It's kind of funny that parents let a kid watch younger kids. I mean, my parents still barely let me stay home alone, and won't allow me to bake cookies if they're not around, to make sure I don't explode the oven or something. But the Matlock kids are pretty fun. Zoe is a 5th grader, and Oscar is in 3rd. Babysitting them must not be nearly as hard as taking care of preschoolers or babies. "What time do you think you'll be home?" Mom slowed down for a stop sign and let the doppelganger Subaru opposite us make its turn. Miss Matlock wasn't sure. She's going to a gallery opening in the city, but she said she'd try to be home by 9.
"Oh, wow. So you're really sitting this time."
The first time, I babysat while Miss Matlock ran errands on island, and she was only gone for 1.5 hours.
"I'll be right next door if you need anything. Don't hesitate to call."
I hugged my arms across my chest. I was a teensy bit nervous, and she wasn't helping. My mom doesn't exactly have a ton of confidence in me. When Miss Matlock had first asked me to sit, Mom kept saying, "I just don't think you're ready to be alone and in charge. I didn't babysit until I was 14. It's not a big deal, Mom. I could totally handle two kids for a few hours without needing my mom as backup, right? After all, Neha and I had taken the official childcare course over winter break at the community center. She was too busy now with soccer to take on any babysitting gigs, though. Text me whenever you're done. I'll pick you up. That way she doesn't have to load the kids in the car. I can walk home. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous for your mom to pick you up, by car, from your next-door neighbor's house. I don't like you walking alone in the dark, okay?" "Fine," I said. But it seemed like overkill. Nothing bad ever happened in our neighborhood. And if a person was old enough to take care of younger kids, wasn't she also old enough to walk home by herself? "You're being kind of overprotective, Mom." "Hey, it's in my job description," she laughed. I fought back a smile. We inched along the driveway leading to my school, slowly because the bus ahead had its stop sign out while the kids streamed off. I watched for Neha to step onto the curb. Maybe I could still catch her going inside. "Do you have gym today?" Mom asked. I saw a flash of turquoise, Neha's puffy coat, as she hurried down the bus steps. Neha was always in constant motion, probably why she was such a good athlete. "Yep, it's a gym day." I started to unbuckle my seatbelt. "So you have your inhaler, right?" I stopped putting my backpack back on, mid-arm slide. I pictured my inhaler sitting on top of my nightstand. "Shoot. Hannah Kate." Using my middle name always means disappointment. My mom sighed, glancing at the clock. She drummed her fingers on the wheel. "I think we should go back and get it. Then I would miss homeroom altogether." "No way, Mom. I haven't even used it since I got over that cold." "You're not supposed to use it all the time. It's a rescue inhaler. You never know when you might need it." "We're not even going to be running around in gym. Miss Whalen is starting a yoga unit. We'll be stretching and relaxing, listening to her wind chimes music." My mom sighed again. "But you forgot it last week, too. I need you to be more responsible about this. You're 13 years old now, and I know how old I am. And I was plenty responsible. I was on the honor roll, I always recycled, and I had that babysitting certificate. The only thing wrong with me was my lungs." I reached for the door handle. Neha was getting farther and farther away, and I saw a grinning girl standing by the double doors, waving at my best friend, Marley. She was wearing a matching puffy coat. I glanced down at my old windbreaker. Maybe if we weren't always running late in the morning, I would remember. "Fair enough. Just promise me you'll take it easy today. Why don't you text me while you're at the Matlock so I know how the babysitting is going, okay?" "Sure, whatever." I pushed the door open. My mom unbuckled her seatbelt and reached over to give me a hug. I could smell her lavender body lotion, mixed with the cinnamon she always sprinkles into her thermos. Whether at home or in the car, she always hugged me goodbye. It was as essential a part of her morning routine as pouring the coffee. I knew it would bug her if she didn't get one in, but I had to catch up with the puffy coats. I swung my feet onto the pavement and hopped out of the car. I turned back to my mom, who leaned over the seat with her arms outstretched. "Love you, bye," I said, giving her nothing more than a brisk wave before I shut the door and, even though she'd just asked me to take it easy, ran down the walkway. I don't like thinking about how my mom's face probably looked, crestfallen and worried, before she settled back in her seat and drove to the ferry terminal, on her way off the island and far from me. 2. I caught Neha alone at her locker after last period. "Hey," I scooted through a huddle of sixth graders. She was busily shoving notebooks and papers into her backpack. Another bag was at her feet, her soccer duffel. Her last name, Jane, was stitched on the front in big, proud letters, and all her Pelling Pirates teammates had signed it in puffy paint. I wanted to talk to her about the Earth Day Expo. I had finally come up with a good idea for a project. My dad's building designs always feature green roofs. Not like painted green, but green because they have plants growing on top of them. They save energy, help with air pollution, and can even be a home for wildlife. Plus, they look really cool. Green roofs are kind of his signature thing. There's even one on our house. Anyway, my idea was to design one for school. Dad could help me create the plans. Neha is super talented at art. She's super talented at everything, honestly. So I thought she'd like to work on the renderings. We hadn't talked about the project since the assembly when it was first announced, but of course we'd partner up for it. Neha and I were always partners. If there were an official code of best friendship, always be partnering would be in it. "What's up?" Neha mumbled from deep in the locker. She popped up and smiled, like she was really happy to see me, but only for a second. "I gotta hurry. Marley's mom is driving us." "Oh, yeah?" I leaned into the locker next to hers, feeling my shoulders slump. "Where's the game?" I used to be on the team, after I started struggling to breathe when playing and turning a really embarrassing shade of red. The doctor diagnosed me with asthma. Then my parents didn't think it was a good idea for me to keep going. "Maybe next fall," they'd said. "Let's see how the inhaler works." To be honest, I didn't really miss soccer. I'd seen how my teammates would look at me as I struggled to run the field, like I was holding them all back. Even Neha hadn't seemed particularly sad when I left. Being with her was the only part I actually missed. She popped out from behind the locker door again. "Bremerton, they're really good." "You're really good." It was true. Neha was the star forward. When I played, even before the asthma attacks, I was the kind of midfielder who got distracted by dandelions and realized 3 seconds too late that the ball was headed my way. She swung the door shut. "Aw, thanks, Hannah." She already had her backpack on and was spinning her lock. She hoisted her duffel. "I don't want to make them wait. Text me, okay?" I hurried down the hall and followed her through the double doors. "Yeah, I will. I'm babysitting tonight." "Good luck." She blew me an air kiss and dashed off to Marley's car. I sighed and trudged toward the bus. I'd have to text Neha my idea. While waiting for the bus to fill up, I watched their car leave, Marley's and Neha's silhouettes visible in the back seat. I could imagine them giggling and sharing red licorice and probably gossiping and doing all the stuff I love to share with Neha, or maybe just talking endlessly about soccer. Somehow this season, the Pelling Pirates had become the most important thing in Neha's life. Her teammates, the most important people. And I wasn't one of them. The bus ride home always feels thousands of times longer than the ride to school. I watch everyone else get dropped off at their stops and start their after-school lives while I'm on board to the bitter end. Seriously, my house is the last stop. And Mr. Fisk's ruthless punctuality only applies in the morning ride. Afternoons are for the scenic route, according to him. By the time we hit the inlet bridge and I'm the only kid left on the bus, he announces that he's become my private chauffeur. Literally, he gets on the PA and tells me that every single day. On days when I get out at Neha's stop, about halfway through the ride, he jokes that I fired him. I forgot to tell him that I wasn't getting out at my house, though. "Mr. Fisk?" I called from my seat toward the back.
"Yes, Miss Hannah?"
That's another part of the joke, calling me
Miss.
Or when he's really into some British TV show about rich people,
Lady Hannah.
"I'm babysitting today. Can you drop me off at my neighbor's? They live just past our house."
"Not a problem, milady."
Crossing the inlet bridge, I couldn't see Mount Rainier anymore. The sky had clouded over. Speeding down the hill on the other side always gives me this peaceful, happy feeling. I'm tucked back in our private little corner of the island, where everything is green and calm and familiar. We passed my house and I smiled, even though I hadn't been able to shake off the feeling of being left out. Forest View Drive never feels isolated, even though it is. It feels safe, like home should. The bus lurched to a stop at the Matlock's drive.
"This it?"
Mr. Fisk called back to me.
"I hope so, because I don't see any other houses. I think I've found where the sidewalk ends."
I laughed. "Actually, we don't even have sidewalks, because other than people driving into the forest preserve, there's no traffic on our road." "Yep, this is perfect." I grabbed my backpack and walked down the aisle. "Thanks, Mr. Fisk." He saluted me goodbye. I stopped to grab the Matlock's mail, watching Mr. Fisk navigate the bus into a 3-point turn so he could head home. He tooted the horn and I waved. The driveway leading up to their house is so long, the Cross Country Club could use it for trail running practice. I walked slowly so I could soak up the quiet before the chaos. The serene look of the Matlock's house and yard is one big fake-out, because it's kind of bananas once you get inside. By the time I was halfway to the front door, I could hear the sharp, dissonant strains of someone learning to play a recorder. The butterflies in my stomach fluttered harder in response. I rang the bell, waited a few seconds, then opened the door anyway.
"Hannah? Did anyone let Hannah in?"
A voice called from upstairs.
"I let myself in, Miss Matlock."
"Oh, good! Welcome! I'll be down in a minute." A pause.
"And seriously, please call me Andrea."
She always said that, but I couldn't not start out by calling her Ms. My mom had drilled that into me since I was a preschooler. It felt too weird to call a grown-up by her first name. I put my backpack down next to the mess of shoes and umbrellas and galoshes in the entryway, and I slipped my phone into my pocket. Then I pulled it back out to text my mom. She's a stickler about making sure I check in. "I'm at the Matlocks."
"Thanks, honey. Have fun with the kiddos. Keep me posted on your adventures in babysitting."
"Okay." The recorder was still going strong somewhere upstairs, and ear-splitting crashing and booming noises bellowed from the TV. I wandered into the living room through the open kitchen. Oscar was curled up on the couch, intensely focused on a video game.
"Hi, Oscar."
"Hi, Hannah. Watch me get this guy."
Something neon burst on the TV screen, and Oscar jumped up from the cushion, piercing the air with his fist.
"Yeah!
Nice," I said, flopping onto an armchair.
"Okay, Hannah, I need your opinion."
Andrea had breezed downstairs during the explosion.
"These earrings?"
She held out a dangly silver pair.
"Or these?"
The ones in her other hand were jade. I hopped up to join her in the kitchen.
"I like the dangly ones."
She held both palms out and studied her options.
"Yep, you're right. Good taste."
She started fastening them into her ears.
"And my dress is okay? Do I need a scarf or anything?"
Andrea did a twirl. She looked great. The dress was a deep teal color and made of a very flowy fabric that swirled like waves as she moved.
"You look amazing,"
I said, standing up a little straighter. Andrea grinned at me. I liked how she asked my opinion about her outfits, almost like I was her friend, not just the kid next door. That, plus the fact that I was there to watch Oscar and Zoe, not play with them, it all made me feel pretty mature. The opposite of how it felt when my mom insisted I text her to check in or freaked out about me not always remembering my inhaler.
"Except there is a teensy bit of lipstick on your teeth," I pointed out.
"Lifesaver," she said, running her index finger over her front teeth to erase it. She smiled wide again.
"Better?"
"Perfect. I'm going to a gallery opening, a friend's show. There'll be lots of people who write reviews or represent artists. Honestly, I'm nervous, Andrea admitted, stuffing her wallet and keys into her purse. I'd love to get them interested in my work. Her drawings were all over the house, framed ones lining the walls and in-progress ones covering most flat surfaces. They were awesome-looking, even if I didn't always quite get what they were supposed to be showing. Sometimes, I thought the people in them were dancing, and sometimes it looked like fighting. Maybe that was on purpose. Her pottery, big tubular vases lining the mantel and the tops of bookshelves, was easier to understand. Anyway, Andrea continued, glancing around the kitchen, I'm going to drive all the way there, even though it'll take forever. I don't want to be at the mercy of the ferry schedule, nor do I want to navigate the sidewalks in heels. She bent to refasten one of the buckles on her fancy shoes. I'll have my phone with me the whole time. If anything comes up, I can head back right away. She paused, chewing on her lip. Don't hesitate to call. I nodded and said, very confidently, I'm sure everything will be fine. Famous last words. The recorder by then was making loud, screechy noises that couldn't be part of a song. It sounded more like a warning siren. Andrea winced. Well, whenever the racket's finished, could you help Zoe with her math homework? That would be excellent. She motioned to Oscar in the living room. For that one, don't let him play video games the whole night. They both already used up their screen time for the day. She glanced at the calendar taped to the fridge. It's Oscar's turn to clean Jupiter's cage. Jupiter was the Matlock's pet guinea pig. In between booms from the living room couch, no! Sorry-o, the schedule doesn't lie. Andrea pulled open the fridge door and scanned inside. There's veggie pasta to heat up for dinner, and basically nothing else to eat. My cupboards are worse than Mother Hubbard's. Tomorrow's grocery day. But if you guys get desperate, I think there's a can of refried beans somewhere. We both laughed. That's it for instructions. You know the drill. Emergency numbers are by the phone. She pointed. Zoe, come downstairs and say goodbye. The bleeding of the recorder stopped, and I heard her feet thudding down the stairs. Andrea swooped Zoe into a hug, spun her in a circle, and called for Oscar to come over.
But I'm almost through this level.
Andrea rolled her eyes and walked over to kiss him on the top of his curly head. After this one, the TV's off. No more games, okay? She looked out the window. Blue sky was attempting to pierce through the clouds. Unless they're outside, it's not raining. To me, she added, maybe get them some fresh air? I nodded as my phone buzzed inside my pocket. I didn't want to pull it out right in front of Andrea, which would make me look distracted, but I was also dying to see if the buzz was from Neha. I sneaked a look. The text was from my dad, a picture of the Sea Spray Resort's roof, covered in cool-looking succulent plants. The ocean glistened in the background. Good job, I texted back. Okay, you're on your own now. Behave, you two. Andrea slung her purse over her shoulder and grabbed her coat off the back of a kitchen chair. The bracelets on her arms tinkled. I know they're in good hands with you, Hannah, she said, which made me blush. I wish she'd tell my mom that. Andrea paused in the doorway, taking one last look at Zoe and Oscar. She seemed slightly nervous about leaving, so I gave her a big smile. Immediately after she walked out of the house, Oscar went back to his video game, and Zoe picked up her recorder again. I paused for a moment, next to the door, listening to the car roll down the driveway. I couldn't tell whether the prickle I felt was nerves or excitement about being in charge. It's just babysitting, I reminded myself. You got this. 3. I decided to tackle the hard stuff first, getting Zoe and Oscar to do the two things their mom had requested. Zoe, go get your math homework. She wandered out of the kitchen, recorder still bleeding.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?